Welcome to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Andras Goggin, a bi-monthly podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Andras Goggin County. Each episode dives into personal stories, showcasing the leaders and entrepreneurs behind the region's economic and community vitality. I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber. I'm joined by local talent, longtime friend, and our producer, Mark Turcotte. Together, we explore how incredible people, the voices of Andras Goggin, build, lead, and thrive while contributing to a better quality of life for all. Today's episode, listeners, is a little bit different and a little personal. I've recently announced that I'll be stepping down as chamber president in 2026 to run for elected office. And today, I'm trading the mic as host for a seat as a guest, which is going to be a wild experience. Joining me is Betsy Sibley. She's chair of the Chamber's Board of Directors, a dedicated community leader who has helped guide the organization through a period of tremendous growth and impact. This conversation is about transition, and not just mine. It's about leadership, legacy, how we plan for the future while staying rooted in the values that got us here. So Mark will be taking the reins as host for this one. Let's dive in.
Let me introduce our first guest. You may be familiar with her. She is Shanna Cox. She has served as president and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber since 2019, leading a bold expansion of the chamber's role in economic development, workforce strategy, and entrepreneurship in Andras Goggin County. A former small business owner, community developer, and policy strategist, Shanna has worked across Maine to support growth from the ground up. Under her leadership, the chamber launched new programs, a foundation, and a podcast. This one, focused on sharing the voices of our community's changemakers. In June of 2025, she announced her plans to step down in 2026 to pursue elected office, signaling the start of a thoughtful transition process with the Chamber Board and staff. Today, she joins us not as a host, but as a guest, to reflect on what's been built, what's ahead, and why this community continues to be her greatest motivation. We are also joined by Betsy Sibley, board chair of the LA Metro Chamber of Commerce and vice president of marketing and business development at Community Credit Union. Betsy is a longtime chamber member, ambassador, and advocate for the Lewiston Auburn region. Currently serving her second year as chair of the LA Metro Chamber Board, she brings more than a decade of hands-on leadership, including her role as vice president of marketing and business development at Community Credit Union. Betsy's energy, insight, and commitment to community impact earned her recognition as one of Uplift LA's finest under 40 in 2017. Whether she's mentoring new professionals, championing small businesses, or guiding major decisions at the board level, she's a steady and passionate voice for collaboration. Today, she joins us to reflect on chamber leadership, the power of transitions, and what it means to plan for the future while celebrating how far we've come. Our first segment is called Getting to Know You. Before we dive into strategy and transitions, we're starting where we always do, by getting to know the people behind the titles. Because whether you're running a business, a board, or a podcast, it all starts with who you are and what drives you. In this segment, we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help you learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level before we get into the deeper questions. So I will ask this of the both of you. And we'll start with Shanna. We'll give Betsy some time to think about it.
Cheats.
Right?
He likes me.
It's good for both of us, I'm sure.
I will say Betsy is my favorite Yankees fan.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is,
it's a short list.
That's true. There's like two people.
Not
on
a lot
it.
Of competition there.
Shanna, what's one thing people might be surprised to learn about you? Something that is not on your resume.
I've mentioned this once or twice before. I'm a lifetime Girl Scout. So I'm a lifetime member of the Girl Scouting movement, which is a thing. I'm a Silver Award recipient, which is the equivalent of the Eagle Scout, which people tend to be more familiar with Boy Scouts. And because of this, I know how to camp in the rain, tie really good knots, and cook food in a hole in the ground. Really great skills that I actually still use every summer. But I really think that Girl Scouts is like a huge piece of like early starts to like public speaking and leadership journey. And I credit a lot to scouting and the scouting movement. And I should probably put it on my resume, honestly.
I was just going to say, maybe that's a problem with my resume.
It's a problem with my resume more than anything else. Someone out there is also a Girl Scout being like, the Silver Award's supposed to be on your resume.
It is, actually. Yeah. I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm a Girl Scout. Proud Girl Scout.
And Betsy, what's one thing people might be surprised to learn about you?
I can't remember the last time I looked at my resume, so I don't know if this is on it or not. But I'm a super sports enthusiast, and I actually have played basketball. And this winter was the first winter I have not played since I was 12.
Wow.
And I just turned 45 this past week, so that's a long run. So I played at Auburn Rec 20 plus years. I played in college. I played in high school. So,
wow. Do you miss it?
I did. I missed it.
Can you, like, I don't know, coach or ball girl or something? Like, is there a way to stay involved that doesn't wreck your knees?
I still play the same way, like I was a 12-year-old. And I did improve a few of those years before the decline in the 40s. But I just think that it's one of those things that, if you stop doing it, you lose that mobility. You lose that, it was just a great way to, like, shake any of, like, the winter blues. Because, I always had good lights in the basketball gym, get sweaty, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, but sometimes you have a good game, sometimes you have a bad game. But it was always, just kind of like that every single week thing that I could look forward to. And that was really hard. I tried replacing it with snowshoeing, which
those feel fundamentally very different.
They are very, very different. But it wasn't the same because snowshoeing was very weather dependent.
Yeah.
Not as exciting to, like, snowshoe at 8 p.m. when my games would be. And I have, like, time to go and do the exercise. I mean, I did do the headlamp thing sometimes, but it's just a little harder to get out and go when you don't have the teammates, like, texting you, like, hey, we need another player. Like, get your butt here, kind of thing.
They have, like, 60-year-old basketball leagues and up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I really thought I might be in one of those. But
it's not too late. You could be.
Yeah, we'll see.
You got 15 years to figure it out.
We'll see. We'll see if I if I go back, around to it. But, like, quite a few of the girls on the team were getting done, and so, like, it seemed time. Kids going away to college.
Yeah.
Like, I just wasn't sure what the next stages were going to be on availability, but I definitely missed it this past year.
Yeah.
So,
Shanna, if you had a weekend free in Androscoggin County, what would you do with it?
I love that. If I had a whole weekend free, I'd hit all the sweet spots. So on Saturday, I would go to Jilson's farm and get plants for my garden, and I'd spend a little time in my garden getting some of my plants in, talking to the flowers, as one does. They like it. It makes them grow better. I would probably grab a quick lunch from Mancini's, and it's huge, so I'd, like, split it with my guy so that we could still have dinner. Because dinner would include 3-course meal, nice glass of wine. Mm-hmm. There's, like, I'd hit Fishbones for that. Da Vinci's would be great for that. Like, I love just the opportunity to, like, sit down, and dining is the experience, the company, the flow of the courses, the service. Like, I love that as much as I love getting my hands dirty. And if that feels not compatible, I don't know what to tell you. I'd probably take in a show on Saturday night, whether it's something at Community Little Theater or the Public Theater, or something happening at the Franco. Like, I'm frequent flyers in all those spots. I would sleep in 100% on Sunday. I would do that in any county, especially my own, in my own bed. I would sleep in on that Sunday, but not so late, because you got to get to the farmer's market early. That's where all the good stuff is. Right. I go to the farmer's market, and I would get myself some flowers, and I would get myself some treats for the week and some meal prep food for later, and probably some more plants, much to my guy's chagrin, because they've always got some extra plants. I, like, come home and be like, we've got to find a spot for these. But
are the plants starting to take over the inside of your house now?
Oh, yeah. No, they started inside.
Oh, like, okay. That was they where just it worked started. Their way outside.
This time of year, she has some space because it's the exterior.
Yeah.
That's right.
We actually, like, move all the plants, a whole bunch of our house plants, onto the front porch during this time of year so they can, like, get some extra growth. Which makes me, lulls me into a false belief that I have room for more houseplants, because the house is so empty of them. And then there's the, like, come back inside before the frost season, of which we realize there's no room for us and the plants.
Yeah. Hmm.
So I would round out Sunday. There's just, like, nature is important to me. So whether it's walking across the Riverwalk and taking in some of the, like, riverside views, honestly, though, I also love a good drive into the country. Like, we're just so fortunate that we have all of the culture and food options that we have. And in 5 minutes, still within our municipal boundaries, I'm in roaming farmland and, like, mowing out the window at cows. And, you know, like, I grew up in rural Maine, and so every once in a while I'm feeling homesick, like, I love the opportunity to get out and see some fields rolling by and some big barns. And so, like, and I get to get all that in within a 30-mile radius and with right here from home. Like, I love that. So good food, awesome. Good shows, nature and farms and plants.
All right.
Yeah.
Betsy.
Hey, I honestly don't remember what a free Saturday, Sunday, weekend means.
It's a mythical question. You can make the whole thing
okay.
up. Yeah,
so I'm going to go for the unicorns first.
Yeah, totally. Ride them through the rest of the weekend.
Right. Get a couple of those. No. I guess I would say definitely, especially in the more seasonal times of year. Dead of winter is a little harder, but get outside is super important to me, and I'm outside more than I'm in when I'm not chained to some kind of technology that requires me indoors. So it definitely is going to include walking and, you know, outdoor things. I love live music. So I know that there's a lot of venues around that will have a band for either a small cover charge, or maybe there's no cover charge. You just go for dinner and listen to whoever's playing.
Lost Valley's doing every Friday cool concerts.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've only been to a couple of those, but, you know, it doesn't really, like, I'm not discriminatory on type of music.
Yeah.
I just like the live music vibe. Mm-hmm. And my kids are teenagers, and they're getting to be at the age where they also enjoy live music.
Sweet.
And they kind of know all the classics. And so I think that is, you know, we would do something around that. I am very drawn to water. So, like, we have a camp on Bear Pond, and we have a camp on Breton's Pond, and we have a camp up in the mountains. So, like, potentially we would go someplace where we would hike and swim and, you know, those types of things. You know, but like Shanna, there's so much in our region. You know, you really don't have to be far from home. I mean, I live in Turner, but, you know, the lakes, the rivers, the streams are all minutes from my house. So
you have some beautiful country in Turner.
Yeah.
Just, like, there's some sunsets on that ridge road at the top that just...
Absolutely.
Overlooks farmland. It checks all my little happy boxes.
Beautiful state. I always, whenever I go away and I see people, they're like, Maine, where's that? And what is that? And I was like, it is literally the prettiest state ever.
Yeah.
We have all the seasons. We have all the things, oceans, lakes, mountains, snow, you know, all the things, and checks all the boxes. And they're like, maybe I should visit there someday. And I said, yes, you should.
Enough with the easy questions. Betsy, what was your first impression of Shanna when she became chamber president?
Well, I had known Shanna for several years before she became chamber president. So when I remember when I first got the news that Shanna was coming in as a chamber president, I was like, over the moon, because I had already thought, like, this, she could do this, she could knock it out of the park, she would be a great candidate, I'm so excited. And then when I saw that it actually happened, I thought I had just put that out to the universe. And I was super, super excited for what was going to come next. And, you know, I just know from Shanna had done some strategic planning and some work with our board and our staff. And I just knew that she had a very interesting, you know, take on leadership. And she was very thought provoking in a very inclusive way to get everyone coming up with their own thoughts, but then helping people kind of hone them into, like, that shared goal. And it just seemed a little magical to me. You know, I came from, I've worked for strong leaders in the past, but, you know, I was just really, really moved by that you know, sort of facilitation that she had done with our team. And then when I found out that she was going to be leading the chamber, I was like, I can't even wait. Buckle up. This is going to be awesome. You know, I couldn't even dream the number of things that we were going to be able to take this chamber to the next level, because I just knew that, you know, that visionary approach, and I was really excited about it.
Awesome. Aww. You weren't even on the board back then. So our relationship had always, like, you were very active in the chamber.
Yeah.
But our relationship really was just the consulting and planning work that I'd done
with
you.
And like community work with Healthy Neighborhoods and, you know, like shared values around lifting up the neighborhood. And, you know, I knew what I had seen could really translate into what was happening at, what could happen at our chamber in the future.
Such a good reminder that I had a whole life before this.
Right? You sure
like,
did.
Oh, that's right. I remember those times.
And Shanna, what is one word or phrase that captures how you feel stepping into this next chapter?
Bittersweet. Like, I mean, I absolutely adore this work. I adore this job. I adore this region. I love this team of people that I get to work with every day. And I think, you know, I could have stayed forever if my only criteria for staying or leaving was, is there more to give? Is there more to do? Like, there's so much more that I want to do. And I'm so grateful for where we're at as a team, where we're at as a board, where we're at with our programming. Like, we're just in a really, really great spot. And that's hard to leave. Like, we've had some really hard spots over 6 years.
Sure have.
Pandemic, to name one, right? And so, like, I think from a leader perspective, you want to support a transition in the time when things are all going the smoothest and you've got the most capacity and the most resources to step away. The selfish side, like that, the way that knife cuts both ways, is like, no, I'll just stay while everything's great. And the next time that there's a pandemic-like moment, I'll just be like, 2 weeks, which I couldn't imagine, right? I couldn't imagine doing that. But, you know, that's the bitter part. And then the sweet is like, there is so much more that I want to do. And I'm excited, not just for my next chapter, but I think there's, like, in this, everything that you just kindly said about what you thought of me taking in this role are the same hopes and thoughts I have for the next executive. And I cannot wait for my business to join the chamber again, like reopen and put my shingle out and be engaged in the things and to bear witness to what comes next. Like, there's such an incredible platform and momentum and trajectory right now that I can't think of what I can't think of. Mm-hmm. If I could, I would have thought of it already, right?
Right.
And so, like, so excited to see that. I think that's the sweet part. But, like that word has come up in my head so many times in the last couple of weeks. It's like, it's bittersweet.
Yeah. Can you share which business will be joining the chamber?
Yeah, the same one that Betsy was just referring to. So Project Tipping Point was the small business that I owned for 6 years before taking this role and is a consultancy practice focused on, you know, largely strategies, strategic planning, work, business executive coaching. I've done both and will certainly be positioned to do a ton more of that. But this niche area that, you know, wasn't always the largest part of my workload, but always the kind of most inspiring of my workload, is working at the intersections of cross-sector initiatives, coalitions, collaboratives, policy work, like bringing people with very different perspectives, very different motivations together around an issue. And I've historically done that in workforce, I've done that in technology, I've done that in lending and grant making and philanthropy. I love that work. I just think that the issues that we face in the world today are like so complex, same for a small business owner, that there's no simple solution. We talk about the 15% solution, which is like getting the right number of partial solutions together that when combined, you start to get to a full solution. And you can't do that alone. So yeah, I look forward to doing that again. And it's not all that different than the type of work that I've gotten to do here, like the number of problems and challenges that we've faced over the years. It will be weird to do it without a full team. Right. The loss of our, like, Becca and Katie and Sam, like, to not have, like, be able to put my head out the door and be like, hey, guys, I've got an idea.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a different way of working.
How did you know it was time for the change?
I mean, I'd love to say that I knew. I'd love to say, like, on a sunny afternoon, and like, but like that
down
is
the Lisbon Street.
I mean, I don't know that I did know. I can't say with 100% confidence that, I mean, the cat's out of the bag, right? But like, there's certain moments in life where you can't know with certainty. Like, do you know if it's the right time to have a child? You think you know, and then you have a child and you're like, wow, was I off on a couple of things? So like, I feel like this is one of those things that are going to fall into that bucket. Yeah. But I went through my 5-year review last October, and in that process, essentially found myself being like, you know, I knew that I came here to do some work, to support operations, to support, like, I knew I was a, when I thought about myself, when I said yes to this role and what I felt like I was saying yes to and being asked to do was to be a kind of like short-term transformational leader. And that's what I signed up for. And I, you know, took this moment to like reflect, this annual moment to reflect last year, and said like, well, this regional marketing project we're working on has got another 2 years on it, and I want to see that through. And that's so exciting. And then like, and mean it. I like deeply mean it. There is no, you know, falseness to that. It's deeply true. And I realized how quickly I could say that for 20 more years. And I think that combined with like, I think I was 8 when like I was on a plane flying with my grandfather to Baltimore for a family thing. And it was like the commuter fight for DC. And then Governor Baldacci was like, oh, tell me what you want to be when you grow up, little girl. And I was like, president. Like, I've always wanted to be, and that is not what I'm doing next November, guys. Just like, just to be really clear.
You heard it here first.
It's not a teaser, I swear. There's no spoiler alerts. I just, like, I've always just believed in public service. I, you know, my parents were volunteer firefighters and EMTs. And I, like, just have always felt the call to kind of, like, be in service and give back. And in my professional career, had some opportunities to work on policies around lead poisoning prevention, which is an issue that deeply impacts kids in the Lewiston-Auburn region. And it doesn't just impact the kids and the families, but it then impacts the school system, and it impacts the justice system, and it impacts the economy. And that work taught me a couple of things. One is that most of the challenges we face are interconnected to other issues, and solutions need to be at intersections and kind of holistic. And that the second is, the amount of energy that you and others with you put into policy has such broader impact than, it's just, policy is one of the ways to like really transform lives or communities. And so I always just like knew that that was the space that I wanted to be in. And so, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe I was, I don't know, right? Like, is it the right time to have a kid? Who knows? Hopefully it's all right, but.
Well, I think it's a brave and honorable choice, you know what I mean? To listen to your heart and to go after, you know, that next level of service, because you could certainly argue that you've definitely been in service to our community in the chamber role, yeah. You know, but like you said, you know, you advocated for small businesses and you did all of these things, but you could work up to a certain point, but you couldn't take it necessarily over the finish line, yeah. You know, and I think that's where, you know, when you hear that calling and you have to listen to it,
yeah.
You know, yep. So
it's that, well, and this role brings me, I mean, I was a small business owner and I'd worked with small businesses, and I come from the long held belief that businesses are the backbones to community. Like, they sponsor the little leagues and they bring the pizza to the project grad, and like, they really, it really makes like the local world go round. And I talk to these business owners who are just hamstrung by different policies, and even through all of the ways that I'm supporting them, some of the root causes come back to policy change, and it just feels like the next step of continued service. Yeah, hopefully now's the right time. I don't know. I know the chamber has never been better positioned. Betsy's an incredible leader. We have great leadership in our staff. Allison Daniels at Central Maine Community College is our chair-elect, and she'll take the reins in January. And this board owns the vision and the strategic plan that we've been working on and under. And, you know, I don't know if my timing is right for what I'm going to do, but it felt like the best timing for the best stewardship of the chamber. And that was probably the biggest factor into my thinking. Thanks for being you, Betsy.
Thanks for developing such a strong team.
Yeah.
You know, like the redundancy and, you know, just so many operational components that you've been able to bake into everything that stays on that mission alignment, you know? And I think that takes a special kind of leadership. And I think that you held on to that and then got people, you know what I mean, to start rowing in the same direction.
Yeah.
And it's really powerful work. It really is. And, you know, probably no one's going to be like, well, the best part of my job is I wrote 3 SOPs. You know what I mean? Like, they're, you know, but the best.
But such good work.
But the best part is when somebody has to step in because they're away, because they're doing an event or they're on a vacation or, you know, on a project, and they can use the SOP and they can get that done seamlessly because they're a team. You know, it really does come to that being best work, you know?
Totally.
So it's a powerful transformation, a way to really make sure that the organization is resilient.
That, I think sometimes leaders, I see some leaders who love it when an organization is dependent on them, that the success is their success. And that might work. I mean, that might like get you to the bottom line results but it's just not good stewardship. It's not good servant leadership of being in service for like the whole health and the future. And I've just never subscribed to that type of leadership personally. Mm-hmm. So leadership development, I think, is like fundamentally at the core, a key strategy of stewardship and of love. Like fundamentally, if you really love something, you will develop others to support their ability to love that same thing into its best version of itself. Yeah.
Agreed.
Thanks for noting that. Yeah. It's like one of my favorite parts. Yeah. I love this team.
Yeah. We are introducing 3 new segments to the podcast.
It's a fun day up in
it
here.
Is, it is.
Mix
a fun
things
day.
Up. Let's mix it up.
We are just putting this podcast in a blender today.
So glad I could be a part of it.
Yeah, feedback welcome. See, and you think this is
feeling
normal,
a
so it's
dizzy
perfect.
As you know, the title of the podcast is Build, Lead, Thrive, and those are also the titles of our new segments. Build, where we look at the work and what's been built. Let's look back. The Chamber has grown in both visibility and impact over the past several years, from workforce development to entrepreneurship, from launching this podcast to growing the foundation. But behind every initiative is a process of building, of turning ideas into action. Betsy, what stands out to you most when you look at what the Chamber has built in the past 6 years?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
Right?
Do I have the next 60 minutes to answer it?
One word. No, I'm just kidding.
I will try to be concise, but I think kind of like my top things when I reflect back on the last 6 years of Shanna at the helm is certainly building out a robust, talented team that knows what the mission is and constantly strives for that, and then also innovates to the next step beyond, you know, because you can't have one person coming up with all the good ideas. I mean, great if you do, but they need other ideas to help them really see other things. I know, you know, Shanna's mentioned that, you know, Brian will often push her to think differently. And
he's the best at challenging me.
You know, Katie also has brought so many different changes and iterations to different events that, you know, were legacy events of the Chamber, and it's just brought them to another level, a different level of engagement, you know, so it really takes all different, you know, different people. So like the robust team with, you know, that diversity of ideation is super important. And the first thing that pops into my mind, you know, obviously when I think of like key milestones, you know, poor Shanna came in and she brought COVID. So like, you know, she was like,
my gift to you,
hold my beer. And you know, here it is. So it was, you know, we talk about a legacy organization that was built on in-person interactions, and all of a sudden that was taken away. You know, lots of places just folded up and said, see you in a few years or not, or maybe this is the end, you know? And so, you know, digging in and saying, What are the supports that people still need as a membership organization? How do we show up as those things in this new world that the rules change every 15 minutes, you know? And so just being able to like lean in to ask people what they need, how it's going, what can we do? And that was at a time of really lean resources for the chamber, you know? Yeah, so it wasn't like, I'm going to just make this big creation. I'm going to ask people for more money so we can do more supports. It was working on a shoestring. And so that, you know, that always is one of the top things. And then obviously the work that the chamber did, you know, following the mass shootings in October, you know, that was a really, really emotional for our entire community, our entire state, you know, really even nationwide. And the ripple effect of all of that is long lasting, and having the ability to navigate and trauma-informed conversations and just, you know, making sure that Shanna and her team were educated, stepping up and supporting where there are gaps in our community on those kinds of skill sets and where capacity was, you know, really thin in other places. I just think that, you know, that was not necessarily the chamber's role, but they were asked to step up and they did in a big way. And I just think that, you know, those are places where the whole team came together and the whole team was like, we're going to do this.
Question mark.
Right.
Exclamation point. No, we are. We are.
And, you know, when a whole team commits to something that hard, that difficult to navigate, but they have that shared experience, it really, that then creates that team and it melds them together. And I just think that there's been several of those different occasions where the team just really showed their mettle. And I think that you can't step up and show up in those situations if you haven't been doing the hard work all along of like making sure that people have opportunities, making sure that they're growing the skill set, making sure that you're stretching them and giving them, you know, places that they can really develop additional skills. And, Shanna has done really great in those, but part of it is seeing that people have that potential and pushing them right to the edge to make sure that they use those potentials.
That's their favorite part about me, I'm sure, if you asked.
You know, it hurts a little at the time, but, you know, in reflection, you know, that you couldn't have got through those really, trials, if you will, if you hadn't been doing those things all along. Yeah. And, those are the top three things that kind have come to my mind in reflection of like key milestones.
Shanna, what are you most proud of in terms of what you and the team have built together?
So I love all of Betsy's answers and I'm insanely proud of all of those things. Concrete example, during the pandemic, a number of chambers in the state closed and did not reopen, right? To Betsy's point, we were the first to start engaging with members again in physical ways. And we were the first to bring people together. And we took the responsibility of like modeling how to do that safely, how to help bridge the debate around masking and how to like create inclusive spaces where people can show up with the amount of distance and the amount of PPE that feels comfortable to them and feel included were really important to us in the how and not just the what. But even before that, we started doing breakfast via Zoom, and we delivered breakfast bags to members. So people would register and we would, like, our team would go out the day before breakfast and would give them a program so that they could still have the same experience and would give them the goodies, like the pot of coffee they could brew at home from one of our members. Like, we did all of those little things in ways to like maintain connection and to be innovative. And you should have seen her like mapped routes and but it kept us really connected to members and to understanding what they need. And that just felt like a really great moment of innovation with our team of like, how do we do? Like, we mailed some breakfast bags to people who weren't in, you know, within the close parts of the county. And so like, I love that. But some of my favorite things that I'm the most proud of are the less visible, less kind of like sexy things. There's tons of things that our members have seen. Like, I'm really proud of where annual awards has gotten. I'm really proud of Uplift LA and its own leadership development and Finest Under 40, the kickball tournament, like Taste the Harvest. There's so many things I'm proud of that are like public and you can see and point to, but truly, Betsy, you nailed it on the head. We could not have done any of that if we weren't doing this kind of hard, deep organizational work around building systems and building people. And so some of my favorite things is like a pretty robust SOP library that we feel really good about. We made a really hard choice after many years. Like every year annually, I'd talk to the same like two or three software vendors and talk about a new membership software that's like our event registration and it's their membership portal. It's like all the things. And it was always a really big investment. And we like finally did it this past year and supporting that transition, getting our staff trained on it, improving systems, finding efficiencies. Like that was some really hard, time consuming behind the scenes work that we did like for 7 months before you guys ever got the email. It was like, we're preparing and you should get ready to log into a new system. Before that email ever went, there was hundreds of hours spent behind the scenes. And so I would also say board development, like, you know, some of your predecessors, Betsy, but like the board that we have now is a representative board and it is a thoughtful board and it is a committed board. And I think it reflects the industries that we serve and the life stage of different businesses and the different sizes of businesses and the geography of Androscoggin County. And you know, the governance work for a nonprofit can sometimes be an afterthought, but it's really the underpinning of like, our board members are incredibly dedicated volunteers who contribute significant amounts of time. Betsy, the most, she can attest to it. And I think that work and the behind the scenes with mindset and the leaders on our board and succession planning on our board has just been some of the things I'm the most proud of. And it's like, it's not something you can just point to or, you know, show a picture of, but almost anything else that you see us doing wouldn't have been achievable without some of that like deep behind the scenes work, and is where I'm like the most proud of. I mean, I love all of it, but I'm really proud of some of that like deep behind the scenes work is just really, it's transformative. If you don't have that like strong scaffolding to support the work you do, it's just could go forever and be really good, or all it takes is like a little bit of a wind and it just all comes down, right? And so those are some of my faves.
I will put this one out to the both of you. Thinking back on the past 6 years, tell us about some of the biggest early hurdles that you've experienced and moments where things almost didn't work.
When I think of hurdles, I work in finance, so I immediately go to the numbers, you know, and I think that there were some, I don't want to call them financial struggles per se, but I think that the chamber model was, I would say, risky-ish when, you know, at risk when the pandemic came, because we relied on people paying to come to in-person events and we couldn't hold them. And so like, I think that was like a huge, like, look over here, this is needs attention. Mm-hmm. And we, as a board and as, you know, Shanna and her team really kind of looked at like, how do we diversify and make sure that we are a sustainable organization? And what does that look like? And what are the foundational blocks that we need to put in place? Because it isn't like you just wake up one day and be like, we're going to be this instead of this for 100 years of tenure, you know? So it was a lot of work. It was a lot of ideation, a lot of debate, a lot of, you know, kind of, you know, there was obviously the chamber had, you know, 900 plus members at some points in its tenure. And so like when you have, you know, 600 or 700 members, you start asking like, are we on the decline? Are we not? And, you know, you really have to look at like the whole business climate, because, you know, there's a lot more small businesses, but if you've priced yourself out of them and you're not providing the services they want, they're not going to join, you know? So are you a chamber for a large business or a chamber for a small business, or how do we be the right size for all different sizes of members. And I think that's really where the chamber migrated to over the last 6 years, is because we need to make sure that we have equitable opportunities for, you know, however the business wants to engage with the chamber. Yeah. And so it isn't necessarily a one size fits all, or the number of employees, or the number of events, you know, those types of things. But it's about connecting to resources and connecting to what means the most to the member. And that was a fundamental shift that was made over these years. And it was like, I wasn't serving on the board at the initial outset of this, but I was an ambassador and I was hearing about it as a chamber member. And so I just feel like there was some serious resistance and it was a very different paradigm shift. And so these were some of the hurdles that I think there was people over here that are like, that's never going to work. And people over here like, well, what we're doing isn't working. So like, should we try this? You know, and, and like, and you kind of have like the risk averse and the risk, you know, appetite. So, that's the initial thing that comes to my mind. And it had financial impact, and it had, you know, staffing impact, and it had, you know, all of the ways that the chamber shows up. So
I think I've been here sick now. For what it's worth, we had a very rigorous hiring process when I was hired. It was like 3.5 months of interviews. And, you know, I was doing my own research. I'd been a chamber member, but I was doing my own research on like the industry, and the industry trends is declining membership, not just in chambers, but membership associations. And, you know, the model that Betsy described, which was the classic, it is the classic traditional chamber model. And we'd had probably our entire 140 plus years when I arrived, was this, what they call a fair share model, which I always kind of chuckle at that name. It feels like the worst name for it ever. Yeah. But essentially, like, everybody got the same amount of benefits, but they paid a price depending on how big they are. And, you know, where we are now, both in terms of like generational shifts and who's making decisions in organizations and businesses, as well as like, you think about the memberships that you have, any person has, right? It's Netflix. You know exactly what you get for your Netflix. It's your gym. You know exactly what you get for your gym membership. Maybe you have a meal subscription service and that membership gives you a box with 3 meals for 4 people every week. You know what you pay. You know exactly what you get for it, right? Like, think about Stitch Fitch, where you, you know, are tailoring, pun intended. I love a good pun. But where you're tailoring what you want for what you're paying. And like, that's the customer experience these days. And chambers, some of them still, we were the first in Maine to adopt the new business model, which is like the membership tiers and levels, which essentially, like, based on your price point or the things, benefits that you want, you can find the membership that's right for you. And that's what we give you based on what you need. And for entrepreneurs, it might be co-working space and connection to resources. And for, you know, larger, more established companies, it might be brand awareness and goodwill to the broader community. And, you know, each of those things come with different like work on the behind the scenes end of what we're producing or creating. And so, you know, we instituted that like just because of our renewal cycle and like the seasonal flow of our membership renewals. I thought I had, shout out to Maureen Obie, bless her heart. I thought I had until January to finalize the whole business model and changes. Turns out November's our biggest renewal month by like a third of our overall membership. And so if I missed November, then we wouldn't get another shot at it really until, in terms of the impact, until the following November. And I started October 7th. And so we approved and put in place a new membership model before the end of November the following month. And then the pandemic hit in March, like 4 months later. And we were in a position to be able to say, I understand times are really tough. We want you to stay connected and get the information we're sharing. Would you like to change your membership level? Whereas before, and for so many other chambers, I'm struggling with how to make this work in my budget meant thank you and goodbye. There was no other conversation to be had. There was no mechanism to have another conversation. And so, yeah, that's one of the things that I'm really proud of. It made us very resilient at a time when other, and at this point for funsies, I think there's 5 other larger chambers in Maine that have adopted the same membership model. And we have a very like sharing community amongst our chamber execs. And so I've, you know, handed over all the stuff and said, best of luck, which I think is a huge compliment. But it's just like, that's what survival for the industry looks like. People do business differently. We're in a global economy. What we needed and what worked 150 years ago is not what's needed today. And so, you know, that's a...
Well, and I think that everything related to the foundation itself, that is all very innovative and different. Like, we didn't have that 150 years ago at our outset, you know, and you know, it really continues to morph and adapt as we go, you know, and just thinking about like ways to creatively make revenue streams. But it's a direct correlation to what we're hearing that the membership needs.
Yeah.
And so we're answering a need, but we're also
strengthening our
financials. Yeah. So it's very smart.
So for folks who don't know, when we talk about foundation, we're talking about like a charitable foundation and not like the floor beneath which I sit on, but like, you know, the charitable foundation, capital F, if you will. We had a foundation prior to my arrival, and it mostly did scholarship activities, which is great. We still do literally more than $10,000 in scholarships this year, which is an awesome, awesome win.
Awesome.
But we also provide fiscal sponsorship and fiscal management and shared services with other initiatives, some of whom, in the same way that we support entrepreneurs, are kind of nascent, emergent future nonprofits. And so we support them. We've had a nonprofit graduate who like did get their 501c3 after a couple years with us. Some folks have their own 501c3, but prefer to share resources so they can put more of their dollars directly into programs and impact. And thus they get some HR services and some financial services through us. And I think diversifying our offerings and our own process of like learning and growing and instituting best practices to do that work, you know, it not only supports nonprofits and nonprofit initiatives, but like, for example, we have a business that's a Top Gun graduate who also is in our foundation as a nonprofit project support too. And we help support the receipt of donations and sponsorship for their reading program. And so they like have a reading tech app, and this allows schools and classrooms to essentially get some of that software for free that increases reading outcomes. And so like, for us, it's always like, how does it align to our mission? How does it relevant to what we're seeing in our community and in this region and what's needed? I mean, it has to pass the mission test. But there's lots of cool ways when you think about like, what does business and community need to build Lead Thrive these days? The answer to that is so multifaceted that it creates a lot of fun space to be innovative in, and in doing so makes us less reliant on just dollars from our membership paying their annual renewal. And I think that's a good place to be in, both for us and for those businesses.
Right.
Our next segment is called LEAD, Guiding Change Through Transition. Leadership isn't just about vision. It's about navigating change, communicating clearly, and showing up for the hard stuff. With a transition now on the horizon, this segment explores how strong leadership across roles prepares an organization to thrive. Shanna, you've led the chamber since 2019.
Yeah.
Tell us about the moment where you told your staff that you were stepping down.
That was the hardest moment.
And how it was received.
Yeah. They could not have taken it better, truly. Like, I think, you know, 3 years, which had like a couple of different staff members at the time. We were a smaller staff at the time. We've grown since then. Might have gone really differently. But I had told the board the week before. Our board and our staff work closely in so many different committees and events that I didn't want any what we call around the office boo-boo faces. They're like, oh, you got a boo-boo, like the sad face. We didn't want any of that happening. We wanted to make sure we could tell them. So I think this is actually on brand for me personally. I was looking at calendars, and because I'm the chief executive, I have access to all the calendars and I can be anyone in any of the calendars. And so process of elimination of finding a time that worked for everyone meant that I, you know, started with all the calendars and then started like clicking. Anyway, the invite went from Becca, our director of marketing, from her account to the rest of the staff with a title. Like, and it should have been sent from me, obviously. But, you know, I made a mistake. And so Becca sent a strategic check-in 30-minute meeting invite to all of the staff. And they called, we're like, Becca, what is this about? I didn't know any of this was happening because I thought I'd sent him from my account. So the bumbling and fumbling into the session was pretty adorable in and of itself. And we've been talking about our strategic, we talk about our strategic plan all the time at Guides Our Work. And so I don't think it set off too many alarm bells, but I sat with a team and I've practiced this conversation very discreetly, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. And I learned really quickly, starting with "I'm resigning" is not a good starting point, because it just creates a whole bunch of other questions long before you can get to like the context. So
those listening, note to self.
Yeah, don't do that. It's talk about what you're going to do next and then back into the fact that it means you have to leave to do it. That's my pro tip. So I looked at the team and said, guys, I've never been prouder of where we are with our work and more confident in your ability to lead it and our board's ability to lead it. And I've made a really hard, challenging decision for myself, but I feel a calling to run for elected office and continue to serve this region in a different way. And they all like paused for a second. They're like, "Oh my God, that's great. Congratulations." And that's so like all of them universally for like 6 seconds. And then like the wave at a stadium, you could see the faces circle and they were like, "Wait a second, but that means..." And then there was that universal reaction, and I've learned to just let that, like, people need a minute. Mm-hmm. Give them a minute. So I gave them a minute, and then said, I just want to be really clear. Like, we're talking November of 2026. We're setting everybody up, including you, for success with a long-term transition timeline. But I think the thing that, like, really stands out to me about not only their reaction, but about the public's reaction when it, like, went out to the public recently is nowhere in there was a sense of deep loss or confusion or lack of direction. Not once. That team was like, "Well, we better do this to make sure next year it's documented and we don't miss a beat." And like there was not, "What are we gonna do?" Or, and I think that's just a testament to this team and this organization. And what I've actually loved is all the conversations I've had since about people saying, "I see this as an opportunity to step into my own leadership or to grow." And I just could not be more proud and like selfishly eager. Like, I don't want to rush it. I'm grateful that we have months. I'm grateful that the board has lots of time to go through a good search process and that, you know, that we have to, like, I didn't get onboarded. The role had been vacant for 6 months. Like, I'm really excited that the next executive gets a great experience. And I want everything to be great about that experience for them, the team, the board. But yeah, I'm also eager to, I don't want to rush it, but I'm eager. I want to just push the fast forward button. Like, I want to live the experience, have the memories.
Well, and the amount of pride that you get to watch your team continue to learn and grow and flourish. And that means it was an excellent transition, you know? And so that there's, you know, can't help but want to see the trophy at the end, you know?
That. Well, and so like we talked earlier about like my strategic planning and the work prior to the chamber. And it's in many occasions I would go in, do a strategic plan or a community or neighborhood plan with a group of people. And then you walk away. Like, the plan is there. They have to hold it. You pray that that goes well. And it's been CCU's done an incredible job implementing its plan. Safe Voices, Skowhegan, Gorham. Like, there's so many places that I've worked that like, I get to quietly sit in my own living room and read headlines and news blurbs and interviews, or so-and-so got an organizational award in their industry, because they're living into it. And that's so rewarding. And I'm grateful that I get that here with this team and this work. Like, I, you know, I don't want to rush it, but there's no part of me that's like, "Oh, and I'll be missing out." Like, no, I'll be cheerleading and watching, and I'll be a community member reaping those rewards, and a business member reaping those rewards. And like, yeah, I can't wait. And the fun part is like, I spend zero time envisioning what it looks like. That won't be for me. That'll be someone else to have their vision and for the board's vision. And I couldn't be more excited about that stage. Like, genuinely, truly. And I know that that's not how all transitions go. but I genuinely, I can't wait for that part.
Yeah. Betsy, what was your initial reaction to that conversation and what came next for the board?
You know, I think everyone deals with change differently. And so, you know, there's the myriad of emotions that come with it. And, you know, Shannon and I had a in-person conversation.
That was her initial time.
So she could see the waves of my facial expressions. Like, I would have been in the same stadium wave here.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, obviously grateful for the service and the place that Shanna took the chamber from point A to point B, and proud of all of that work, and also like thank you and for setting us up for success. You know, so this is an organization that people are excited to work for, work with, you know, and be part of the next iteration. And so I am a hopeless optimist in general, but I do think that we're going to have lots of great candidates that are interested in being this next leader with a dynamite team behind them that has the skill sets that they need. And, you know, so I am, you know, I had a couple of like boo-boo moments, I guess, you know, and I was like,
oh. Your recovery time was really good. Really good recovery time for you.
You know, it's because I do see that, you know, I care about this community and I know that Shanna's going to keep doing amazing things that lift up everyone in this community. And so rather she's at the helm of the chamber or she's serving in public office, like I know that her impact is not going to stop. And so I can be happy around that piece. I think the most challenging piece for me is we have a great board, but I've never been through a lot of change with them. And it sounds like we have because all of this change that's happened over the 6 years.
But the board is always changing too.
But the board changes, you know, in 2-year terms, you know, with a max of 6 years, I believe it is. So like there's always somebody that's new and there's always somebody that has the historical perspective and then kind of the people that are keeping it normal in the between. And it just has this ebbs and flow. And so we really don't have one or two board members that had any part of the hiring experience for Shanna 6 years ago because it was 6 years ago. Yeah. And so that was a different board at that time. The reactions were kind of all over the place. And it really is a testament to how people handle change. You know, some people are very like, okay, and the next step is, and that's how they get through the process. And other people are very emotional about it. And so, you know, people enjoy working with Shanna because she's fun, you know, and she has a lot of great energy and a lot of great ideas. So no one was like, "Woo, she's gone. Let's go." You know what I mean? So I think people were excited for her, you know, professionally to be going into this different stage. But overall it was okay. We have a job to do. We all have a passion around chamber we wouldn't be serving. And like these are going to be the next steps. And we're really appreciative that we have this long ramp, you know, to get us there in a smooth way.
Yeah.
The absence of engaging in electoral politics is fundamental to being successful in having policy conversations, to working with multiple parties on a core issue that's important to business, and being focused solely on the outcome that your business community wants, regardless of who it came from, how it was voiced. Like, that doesn't matter. And it needs to keep not mattering for any of my successors and this chamber to be successful and for businesses to get good, great outcomes. Like, so like, don't change that. If, aside from that, and the fact that, you know, 8-day work weeks and 30-hour days existed, one could do both. Like, I'm sure I would try to figure it out because I love the job, but like, it's not compatible. Like, sleep isn't, on some days currently, sleep isn't compatible with this job all the time. And so, right, like you go through seasons. And so,
what advice would you give to other nonprofit leaders navigating change?
Give yourself and others grace. Like, to Betsy's point, I am a lover of change the way you're a hopeless optimist. And I think it's both of our like great qualities. It is not everybody's cup of tea, which I can also appreciate. My partner will attest to that. He loves his good routine. And I've always, like, I you know, stale is a thing that I worry about. And I don't ever want to stop learning or growing. And that in and of itself is change. And so what I've realized is that people really, their past experience, the way change was introduced or thrust upon them, the expectations of or not that were shared about that change can really bring a lot of history to how someone experiences change. as an organizational leader and as somebody who I like to think is a change leader, like that is what we've done consistently is and for all the ways that we've talked about today. So whether it's a big transition like this or if it's implementing a change like a business model or software, whatever it is, you know, like I think first and foremost, give grace and give more time than you think you need, because the very different ways that people process, make sense of, come round to, and are able to support change, that is a spectrum of time. It's not like two options. And then I think the other piece that I would really name is, as you're thinking about change, I mean, this goes hand in hand with giving grace, but part of that is communicating clearly, transparently, often. And communication is not just talking at people, it's listening. Right. Listening is also a key part of the communication process. And so like, as you say, hey guys, we're going to go through a change. This is what's known. This is what's unknown. This is where you can make decisions or lead. This is where I'll be making decisions and leading, or the customer or member will. Like, just laying out the parameters, being really clear about where there's space to co-create or to mold something versus where like this is off the table. We can't, like the pandemic, we came home from a breakfast, and an hour later, the first case in Androscoggin County is announced, which is also the first case in Maine, and we just convened 150 people. Did we institute a whole bunch of practices way before we even knew what those practices were called? Yes, we did. There was hand sanitizing stations and spacing and all of that jazz. And so we just sat down and we're like, here's what we know. We know that we're going to go home and we might not come back right away. We don't know when we'll come back. We don't know what it'll look like. Here's the things we can't figure out. How do we just like make a commitment to navigating that together? All of us are leading, whether it's you leading your family or we are all leading change in some way, large or small, at almost any given moment. So like, just give grace and lean into being as transparent and talking about it as clearly as you can with others, and hope that they share that and give that back too.
Sometimes people just have to get the emotions out before they can be like, okay, I've purged and now I'm ready.
Yeah.
So what are the next steps? That. And I just think that you, like you said, give space for that.
Yeah.
Because some people it's you will 12 not seconds, move on. You know, yeah. And they rebound, yeah. You know, yeah. And then some people it's like 12 days, you yeah. know, or months, you know, mm-hmm. and you have to try to keep working with them at the stage they're at.
Yeah.
Our final segment is called Thrive, Vision, Hopes, and What's Ahead. The Chamber's mission is about building, leading, and thriving. This last segment is about thriving, both personally and organizationally. It is about legacy, momentum, and what you hope will grow next. Shanna, what do you hope people will say in 10 years about this moment in the Chamber's history?
I hope, honestly, and like I was a member, I watched other leadership transitions of this chamber. I hope the conversation is more like, do you remember when the workforce changed post-pandemic, that thing that happened in the early 2020s, right? Like the way that, and do you remember how the chamber like responded? It's so crazy to see how it's grown since then. Like the best retelling of that story won't include my name. Won't include a credit, won't, you know what I mean? It'll just be, I'm so excited about today and this thing that we get to enjoy. And I recognize that it wasn't always there. And if somebody asked, maybe you could trace it back to this general time frame. But like, I hope it's just a really broad, you know, look at where we've come in the last 10 years. I love that. That's what, like, that's all I want. That's all I want.
Betsy, what does thriving look like for the chamber in 2026 and beyond?
Oh, we've had some good visioning sessions and board
yeah,
meetings.
I'm pretty sure there's a helicopter pad.
Is she
going to
share all of it? I was like, is the helicopter pad going to make it in?
And, you know, so I think that, I think everybody's vision for the chamber, if we look at, you know, and survey the membership across hundreds of members, are going to be a little bit different. But I think that, you know, ultimately, the chamber is a convener of, you know, people that are stakeholders in this region that want to make sure that people can build, lead, and thrive. And so I guess the way I would envision thriving is we still have robust business offerings, you know, of all different industries. And there's, you know, workforce supports, and there's, you know, talented folks that are going to work for talented organizations that are providing, you know, everything from the financial services and the widgets to the food and the entertainment in the region. And I just think that, you know, like Shanna had mentioned, everything is interconnected. And I think the chamber is part of the glue that holds all of those pieces together. And if you're a business that has not been engaging with the chamber, now is the time. Get involved with your chamber, you know, become a member, have a voice at the table, because this region is poised for greatness. Yeah. And you want to be part of that. You know, if we're thinking about what, you know, what people are saying 10 years from now, you want to be part of this yeah. momentum, and it's going right, you know, the sky's the limit. And I think that I would love to see our chamber have its own facility that it can host, you know, an incubator for small business mm-hmm. and co-working spaces and their own breakfast and networking events, so they didn't have to go to every place in the region. But it also is a great benefit to be able to go to these other places in the region, so people get to have the experience at the Hilton or at Bates or at these different locations. So I don't think that there's one right answer to it. I think that Thriving is building on some of this great ideation that we've had over the last several years, and then figuring out what the next thing is that people are looking for this region. And then, you know, I think the chamber is a great conduit, you know, to get people there. You know, the chamber doesn't have to do everything, but they can connect the right folks
yeah.
that can be that launch pad.
Final question, and it's for the both of you. What's one hope that you have for the next generation of leaders in our region?
It's a good question. Authenticity and courage. In my own leadership studies and in my own leadership journey, people talked about different leadership styles. And we, you know, I have this great mentor, shout out to Carol Martin, who just said to me, like, really clearly, like, oh, leading is lonely. And I feel that. I've felt that so many different times over the years. And by, like, definition and design, sometimes it really is. But there are really great ways to break that and to find the support you need from other leaders. And sometimes it's from within your organization. Sometimes it's from within your industry. Sometimes it's just being vulnerable with a family member that you love and being like, I'm just really struggling to get through this moment in time, whatever that moment in time is. And so, like, you know, there's just with social media and with some of the, like, stuff that's happening out in the world, and AI and, like, generated photos and generated videos now, and deep fakes, and, like, it's going to become more and more important and more challenging to stay and be authentic. And for that reason, I think it is going to be more and more relevant and valued. And so I hope the next generation who grew up with this social media, who, like, right, like, they're just in a different, like, I just really hope that they find ways to be authentic, which means, like, owning your screw ups and owning your vulnerability and leading not in despite of those, but from those places in really authentic ways. And that takes courage. And so I hope they're also just, like, really brave. So authenticity and courage, go get it, next gen. However I can support you, please let me know. Like, I want to see them be successful.
Betsy, what's one hope that you have for the next generation of leaders in our region?
I mean, I think I would echo all the things that Shanna has said. I think that, you know, I would take this as an open invitation to folks that are looking for leadership opportunities to get involved with their chamber. Yeah. You know, come be on the board, come be on the committees, come learn everything you can squeeze out of this organization, yeah. because there's a lot here between the staff and the board members and the activities and the, you know, the programs. I think that it's a great place for us to grow the next best leaders of the region, of the state. And I think there's so much opportunity here. And not every organization embraces leadership and encourages their people to keep expanding their opportunities. And not everybody pushes their people like Shanna has with her team to like stretch and grow. But you can get that by coming to the different programming that's offered at the yeah. Chamber. And I think that's just another testament to what the Chamber is bringing to this region, because they have something for everybody and at whatever stage you're at. And if you are, you know, 30 years in an industry and like you're ready for your next career path, we have that too, yeah. You know? And so like, it really is for anybody, you know, somebody in their 20s that got their first job, you know, just graduated from whatever their study program, like there literally are places where you can connect at any of those stages. And I just think that if you're wondering where to go, come to your chamber and start mm-hmm. there, because we have great people that can get you connected in the right places. I mean, we haven't even talked about Strength in LA, and it's just like,
I mean, in all kinds of ways, but without saying their name, but all of our workforce comments, all of the career comments,
yeah,
industry supports, industry transformation and training.
It's best practice yeah. and what every community needs. And so yeah. it's just, there's so many of those things. And if it isn't directly a chamber program or a chamber foundation program, we know who is doing it and we can get you connected through the chamber. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that, you know, that old adage of it's just a membership organization and it's just so I can have my name in the book that I'm a member, you know, that is not who and how this chamber identifies anymore. You know, yeah. it is a membership organization, and members do work with other members, but it's because they've built relationships
yeah.
and they've learned great skills and connections through the different programs offered. And I just think that if we have aspiring leaders and they might not be getting all of that professional development because not every organization is equipped to handle that yeah. for their young leaders, go right to the chamber, and that's already built out for them and they can just intersect there. Yeah. So I'm feeling really hopeful. I have two teenage boys that are coming up. One of them's in college now, and like will be they are in the workforce. They are working, but you know,
she used air quotes.
Yeah, she used air quotes. You know, but they are not 40-hour career right, working. Right. They are like get a little money to pay.
Your teenagers aren't salaried. Wild.
Yeah, not.
Can't find my kids that job either.
You know, so I you know they're still in the job. They're testing it out, and I don't want them to be in a 50-hour commitment in the teenage level. But yeah. this is where they learn how to be a good employee. Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a lot of folks out there that don't always teach how to be a good employee yeah. to those young workers. Mm-hmm. And we have those opportunities here at the chamber for, you know, a workforce coach to work with somebody mm-hmm. on those skills or to get them connected to a program. And not every chamber has that.
Too, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
So like, there's so many. Yeah. Even if you're hearing this, and you're in, I don't know, the Western United States. Thanks. We're the other LA, but keep listening and subscribe. but like, start with your chamber. Like, we're certainly not a traditional chamber. We've kept a fair amount of our legacy programs and some of the things that I think really define why chambers were created and what we are. But we're so much more than that too. But you know, go check with your local chamber and, you know, start here, the LA Metro Chamber. But if we're not close to you, wherever you're listening, do check with your chamber. You might be surprised at what they're doing or how they look these days.
And folks outside the region, there are a lot of things that our chamber offers that folks that are non-members and folks that are outside the region can access, yeah. you know, so it is a starting place.
Totally.
Betsy, you made it through your first podcast.
Yeah, you did great.
Where's my candy bar?
I know. I actually have some chocolate in the front. I can go get you a little treat on the way out.
Shanna, how did you like being a guest?
It was wild. I miss those days a little bit. Yeah, honestly, it reminded me of the radio days.
Yeah.
I miss you.
The radio
that
days were
so
a lot
lovely.
Of fun.
Yeah.
That's when I realized, like, she's doing great work here, but down yeah. the road, there's going to be a whole lot more.
Someday, yeah. yeah. Thank you so much. Like, this made it very easy. And like,
yeah.
I always enjoy conversations with you. Like, Betsy's just fun in a bottle.